Miss Janine Barlow from USGS, Lower Mississippi Gulf Water Science Center in Jackson, Mississippi. And she will be talking about a stakeholder-driven approach to optimize modeling and monitoring of water resources in the Mississippi alluvial plain. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hank. And I will try my best to make sure that this is not Greek to all of you. I've learned a lot this afternoon just being here and appreciate the opportunity to come and talk about water. We've been working in the Mississippi alluvial plain for some time as the USGS, and recently we have delved into a more stakeholder-driven approach to monitoring and modeling our water resources specifically for agriculture. And so I will briefly take us through this effort. As many of you may know, the Mississippi Alluvial Plain is an economic engine to that region. It's very important to the region. It's not just the dollar signs that you see there. It's the people that agriculture supports in this region. And what kind of drives this agricultural engine, one of the things that drives it, is water. And the aquifer, or the groundwater supply that supports the Mississippi alluvial plain, is one of the most used aquifers in the nation. Back in 2000, it was right behind Central Valley and High Plains, and we'll have a presentation on the High Plains immediately following this. So all of that water use is supporting a lot of agriculture, but just like our bank accounts, when we have a lot of withdrawals, that can come at a cost. And so what we're starting to see in the Mississippi alluvial plain, and we're not alone, is that we're taking out more water than is coming back in every year, and so we end up having an overdraft. And there's some concern about whether or not there will be enough water for sustainable agriculture supply. When we look at water budgets for these three most used aquifers, Central Valley, High Plains, and the Mississippi River Valley alluvial aquifer, these are all used for agriculture. These are all very important agricultural regions. And we can divide those water budgets up into three basic areas. So the blue that you see there is evapotranspiration. Not much that we can do about that. That is what is going to be taken up by the sun or by the plants, right? Then you'll see the red, that's runoff. So that's what is hitting the ground surface and then moving off either into streams or other low-lying places. And then the green area you see, that's recharge. So that's the amount that's actually coming back into the aquifer every year. So that's the input back into your bank account. And you'll notice that these three areas look somewhat different. In the Mississippi alluvial plain, there is an opportunity in that runoff and recharge area. If you look at that pie, you'll see we have a larger percentage in those two areas to take advantage of that available water before it might go elsewhere. There are also small percentages of opportunity in the High Plains and in Central Valley. And really what's going on here is it's very similar to what we, somewhat similar to what we just heard about the breeders and with the seeds, is that we're trying to optimize all of these sources of water and put them to the best use while also making sure that we have water in the future. So in the Mississippi alluvial plain, and much like other places experiencing overdraft with their water supply, the basic issue is we have more water coming out of the system than we have coming back in. After that, it really is not as simple anymore because there's a lot of places that that water can come into the system, and here by system I mean the groundwater supply and this alluvial aquifer, and there's a lot of places that that water can go out to. So this is a very simple schematic, and it kind of shows you how, at least for the alluvial aquifer that supplies water in the Mississippi alluvial plain, we can have water that comes in from recharge zones like the Mississippi River or the Bluff Hills, so higher areas, water moving downhill basically. We can have water coming in and out from our streams. But the number one kind of movement of water is an output, and that's the wells that you see kind of drawn on there. That's the water that's being withdrawn for agricultural supply. So in the past, what has kind of made this maybe a little bit more complicated was that we had our monitoring people, so the people that are actually out there collecting data on our water supply, were somewhat separate maybe from the folks that were in the office doing the modeling. And you can imagine they're separate, kind of different types of people too. But what we're trying to do is to integrate those together. So that you might start with a model that you've developed. Here we have a groundwater flow model or a hydrologic model for the Mississippi alluvial plain, and you would use that to try to better understand the system. But you would also want to use that to help, this is what we're trying to do differently, direct your monitoring. So you can get output from that model and see where it's the most uncertain, and then make sure you're targeting those data sets when you go out and collect that data, because we never have enough resources to collect all the data that we need. So really trying to optimize that so that in the end we have a much better understanding of the system and we're able to make predictions about it and do different types of scenario analyses with much better accuracy. So I'm going to take you through kind of how this Mississippi Alluvial Plain project is working right now. We start, like I just said, with a hydrologic model. A U.S. Geological Survey is working very hard to create these hydrologic models for pretty much the entire nation. So most places, and particularly our agricultural areas that have a lot of water supply needs, already have some type of hydrologic model established. So we can start there. And then I think this is just as important. The next step is to look at our stakeholders. Who are the people who are actually using this water? What are their needs? And that's why this is very much stakeholder driven. We like to say that we are trying to do science with our partners, with our stakeholders, not to them. Then we have our water budget side. And I showed you a slide earlier that had a very simple kind of depiction of the water budget. In this, we have both our monitoring and our modeling to produce the most accurate water budget that we can for the Mississippi Alluvial Plain. So on the left side there, you'll see different monitoring efforts. We're looking at things like how old is this water? That can tell us something about how quickly the water is recharging the system. We're going out and actually measuring water use on irrigation wells for the first time and then having that data fed back into our model, which is greatly improving our model's ability to predict future conditions. Also increasing our surface water monitoring, ET, and different types of remote sensing capabilities that we can also leverage here. And all of these can then be fed in to produce models of things like recharge, how much water is coming back into the system, how much water are we using, how much water is leaving our area, and how much ET is occurring. Then on the right side here, we have our hydrogeologic model. So I talked about the water budget. That's kind of an accounting side of this. Where's the water going? Now we need to understand the texture of this system that the water is moving through. And so when we start to talk about things like groundwater or aquifers that hold groundwater, it's not as simple as really just like an underground lake, right? We have a lot of different materials that are holding that water, and the water will move through those materials depending on how coarse or fine they are. So it's really important for us to understand that texture so that we can really better route the water through the system. Okay, so again, you'll see kind of a monitoring side here, producing models of the different parts of our hydrogeologic system. And I'm going to go into this with a little bit more depth here. Okay. So one of the techniques that we're using a lot of geophysical techniques, doing some electromagnetic data collection. And we've been doing this at all scales, from towing instruments across the ground, through our streams, and then here recently we've actually gone to the air and we're collecting this data from the sky. And the reason we're doing it is that this works a lot like if you were to go in and get an MRI, right? And if you were to go to your doctor and he thought something was wrong with you, you would probably want to get something like this before he started cutting on you, right? So it's a very similar idea. We're trying to get a visual image of what's beneath our feet. So So we are doing this. Here's an example that we did with a helicopter, and I don't know if anybody that was in the Mississippi Luyo plane got to see this, but it was very exciting because that does look like a torpedo. We are now flying a regular plane that is not as ominous looking, so not as exciting. And the way that this data works, and I'll show you just a few slices of it, is basically we get this resistivity back. So we're shooting the signal down into the Earth's surface, and then we receive what comes back to us, right? And based on how much of that comes back to us, we get this resistivity signal, and then we can relate that resistivity value to things like the grain size. So are we dealing with sands, clays? Are we dealing with big gravels that can hold a lot of water? We can also tell things about groundwater-surface water interaction. So how easily can surface water move into the aquifer and vice versa? Sometimes groundwater recharges our streams as well. So the way, when I show you this, when you see blue, think fine-grained and really not able to hold a lot of water. I know that's counterintuitive. We've asked the geophysical guys to change it and they won't. So when you see red, that's coarse grain, and you can think water. And so we can slice this a couple of ways, just like with a medical image. We can do a 2D profile, or we can do a depth slice, like I was peeling off one layer at a time. So here you see the 2D profile. This is a nice cross-section through the Mississippi alluvial plain, and we can very clearly make out the red areas. Those are going to be the most productive parts of the aquifer, and this is really important both for the people that we are working with, the producers in the area, but also for our model as well. And then you see the bluer areas. Those are areas that water is not going to move through as easily. And this can help us to understand things about how productive the aquifer is, but also recharge potential. So if we see a bunch of blue at the top, it means that you have a very low recharge potential. You probably have a lot of clays, fines. So this is another useful kind of extra product that we're getting out of this information. You can also take this depth slice. So here you can see the entire Mississippi alluvial plain. I believe we're looking at kind of a midsection view and start to see where the aquifer is more productive, where it might be less productive, and so on. So beyond just helping to improve the model and helping to better describe the texture of the aquifer, and we are finding that the geophysical mapping is having a lot of other benefits for water resource management. Like I mentioned, recharge, groundwater surface water exchange, and just getting that framework of the hydrogeology a little bit, well, actually much better, much clearer. But we're also using this for different infrastructure projects. We have been working with USDA ARS on a groundwater transfer and injection pilot project, helping them to collect additional geophysical data to help to place a well to abstract water from the Tallahatchie River and then convey it over and actually inject it right back into the aquifer, essentially short-circuiting the recharge process and increasing how quickly that water can get back into the system. We're also using this to help with the Corps of Engineers doing weir projects to locate places where you might put a weir to actually enhance recharge back into the aquifer. So you find a place that has really porous stream bed, and then you can put the weir there, increase the head in the stream. That's going to increase the pressure and how much water goes back into the aquifer. And we're working with the Corps of Engineers to use these geophysical techniques to assess really the health of the levee along the Mississippi River. We currently have planned over 40,000 line kilometers of data collection just for this part of the project. We are currently up in the air right now flying in the Mississippi alluvial plain, and we're actually, we just got the appropriation right recently. We found out that we're also going to be moving into the Mobile Basin as well. And this is just a picture to show you the data that we've collected, this geophysical data, but also to highlight that at this time in the United States, this is the largest amount of geophysical data that has been collected for water resources purposes. So what you're seeing is pretty much what we have. Everything else is up in Alaska. And there are countries like Ireland and Australia who have done, you know, full kind of mapping campaigns for this type of data. So that kind of shows you how the water budget model, hydrogeologic model work together, feed into the actual hydrologic model. Then there's the data worth and uncertainty part, where we're actually looking at the output of that model, looking at which data pieces are the most uncertain, and feeding that back into our monitoring program so that we can continue to improve the model, because this is very much a dynamic process. We've also added an economic model to this because we found when we're working with our partners, at the end of the day, they want to know how much does it cost to get this water resource improvement. So we do have an economic model and then a web version. So how does this all work together? I'll give you a really quick example here to show you the practical application of this effort. So in the Mississippi Delta, we had a lot of great ideas for different alternative water supply resources, but they really hadn't been tested out. And so we looked at different options to either decrease groundwater withdrawals, like different irrigation efficiency measures. We also looked at options to increase recharge directly to the aquifer. This is where the groundwater transfer and injection project that's being led by USDA ARS came out of. And so essentially what we did, we start with our model. We started this in 2013. We look at what the water level is. We run the model for 50 years. The water level is going to drop some level because we've been using more water than it's been putting in. Then we run another model. This model scenario is looking at one of those alternative water supply options. And the water level is going to drop again after 50 years, but hopefully less than in the base scenario. We call that difference between those two the water level response due to that scenario. How much water did you gain because you put that alternative water resource into place? Then we can feed that into the economic model, and then we can get to what I think our partners really want to know, and that's the cost per acre foot of water level response. So how much did it cost to get that water level response? And so we've gone through that process in the Mississippi Delta. We are expanding throughout the whole Mississippi alluvial plain. And now we're moving into our next phase. Instead of looking at individual scenarios one by one, we want to look at the whole suite together, all of the different options. And we want to have the model actually run itself thousands and thousands of times and tell us what the best suite of options would be to meet our goals and live within our constraints. So that's the phase that we're moving in now. So thank you very much. I appreciate the time to be here.